This episode of the Sleep Apnea Stories podcast is sponsored by Aeroflow Sleep. Aeroflow Sleep is the nation's fastest growing durable medical equipment company, supplying CPAP machines, masks, and accessories to sleep apnea patients with eligible insurance plans. Not only do they conveniently ship CPAP supplies right to your door, Aeroflow Sleep takes it upon themselves to navigate the complexities of the insurance process. They speak to your doctor on your behalf so you can be confident in the treatment and coverage you receive without lifting a finger. If you're due for replacement parts, Aeroflow Sleep takes care of that too. They inform you exactly what's needed and when through a state-of-the-art online patient portal or via your preferred method of contact. I learned about Aeroflow Sleep 3 years ago, and I now support them as their patient advocacy expert. And what I love is that they're not just providing you with a product. They're genuine people. They're ready to serve you and looking to put the care back into healthcare. To learn more, visit their website at aeroflowsleep.com. That's A-E-R-O-F-L-O-W sleep.com. And learn more about Aeroflow Sleep today. On this podcast, we discuss medical diagnoses and procedures. All of the guests express their own opinions. You should always seek medical advice from a trained and credentialed professional when making decisions about your own health. Welcome to the Sleep Apnea Stories podcast. I'm Emma Cooksey, and I've been coping with sleep apnea since childhood. I didn't know anyone in my life with a sleep disorder, so I decided to start this podcast. I'm here to build community and provide a platform for people with sleep apnea to tell their stories. Together, we can shatter stereotypes and raise awareness. We'll be exploring all sorts of treatment options and lifestyle choices to help you live your best life with sleep apnea. This is Sleep Apnea Stories, and I'm so glad you're here. Hey there, it's Emma Cooksey here, and I'm your host. So I feel like there's a lot to update you guys on. It's been a really busy week for me. So last week I was invited to speak to the staff at ApneaMed, which was kind of a big deal. Like, they're a company who are developing a medication for sleep apnea. And I took it as a really great sign that they were interested in hearing my story and just engaging with patients, you know, and like trying to keep patient perspectives in mind when they're working towards putting out this drug in the world. So one of the things that a couple of people had DM'd me on Instagram to kind of say, like, how are you getting to do things like this, you know? And I think that the answer goes back to the fact that I did the Rising Voices program with Project Sleep. So Project Sleep is a nonprofit that I'm on the board for, but way before that, like, I volunteered with them and then I signed up to do this thing called Rising Voices, where they train you to tell your story, to share your story of living with a sleep disorder in your own community. So I've done things like talk at schools. I've spoken at conferences. If you follow me, you'll kind of have, you know, heard about all the different things I've been doing. And so I think that that program, I was already kind of doing the podcast and speaking out before that, but that program really helps you to hone your speaking skills and pick out the best parts of your story to really resonate with people. So I'm telling you all of this because if you are someone living with a sleep disorder, you can apply now to take part in the Summer's Rising Voices program. It's kind of, you know, a bunch of Zoom meetings and you do some homework and you practice your talk with other people. And that's really the funnest part of it. You get to meet other people with sleep apnea or narcolepsy or, you know, any other different sleep disorder. And I think that it's really nice to get to meet those people. So it's open to people all over the world. We've had people from all different countries complete that program. I'm going to leave the link in the show notes so you guys can go and check it out. But the Project Sleep website is project-sleep.com. And if you go there, you'll see Rising Voices. You can click on it for more information. So that was just a little plug for that. So on to today's guest. Today I'm joined by Bijo Sebastian, who is in India, but as he explains, he was living in France when this whole journey started. And we had no shortage of technical issues and sound problems, issues with the Wi-Fi. So this conversation with Bijo isn't as long as I would have liked, but I think we cover a lot of the really main points of Bijo's story that I want you to take away. I think it's so incredibly brave when anyone, but especially men, speak about the mental health impacts of dealing with sleep apnea and the knock-on effects, where really that was one of the factors in the end of his relationship with his wife, and then how he's managed to, you know, keep on with his journey and seek out treatment and just really is in a much better place than he was at the beginning of his story. So I just want to thank Bijo so much. This is the first time I've interviewed somebody from India. I've had people from China, Australia, England, France, Germany, Spain, the United States, obviously, and Canada. And so if you're in another country I haven't interviewed somebody from, I would love to hear your experience. So without further ado, here's my conversation with Bijo Sebastian. So thanks so much for joining us. You're the first person that I've interviewed from India.
Thank you.
So tell us about how old you were in your life when you first started noticing symptoms of, you know, maybe tiredness, sleepiness. How old were you around then?
I was 35 years old. Till then, I had absolutely no idea that I had a sleep problem. A little bit similar to your story where you almost dozed off, just that I just slipped off on the wheel while driving. And my wife was sitting on the right side. She just touched my hand, and that's when I woke up, and we saw that the car was going towards the truck, which was coming, and I had my three kids in the back. So that's when this whole thing of sleep comes in as a thing, and then I just parked the car, and I said...
Terrifying, right?
Totally. I mean, I can just... it's like as if it happened yesterday, because it stays in the back, because I could have killed all five of us, and I could have also had an accident, or, you know, it's a public danger, actually.
Yeah. So you had your wife beside you, but then also your three children in the back of the car when that happened.
Exactly. My youngest was 1 year old. Today he's almost 13 and a half. So, yeah. Then I stopped the side, and then I said, well, I don't know what happened. It was just a blank. And the blank, in the sense that, like, it's like all of a sudden, I mean, it was just blank. I don't know how to express that. It was just blank, and it was like, I didn't know where I was. It was a total shock. And I said, no, usually I have a control on myself, and this, it was just out of the zone. I was like, no, it's not possible. It's not me. So I said, no, there's something wrong, and something is wrong. So I'm not going to drive anymore until I know what's happening with me, why I'm sleeping, and I won't take the car till there. Then we went and met a doctor, and our general physician, and so he directed us to go and meet a pulmonologist in France. Mm-hmm. I was in France. Okay? My wife is French.
So you were in France when that incident happened, or you were in France when you went to see the doctor?
So I had this, and then we went and met the pulmonologist. We were living not very far away from Paris. So just on the first circle of Paris. And so I used to smoke also. So his first one was to go and meet the pulmonologist and a cancer specialist to know what's wrong. Like, you know. So the pulmonologist, he said, okay, sleep test, etc., etc. I sleep well. I mean, I have no issues. Maybe you should do a sleep test and things like that. Maybe there's some problem with your sleep. We need to check that. I said, no, I sleep normal. I mean, I even snore in sleep, and I can even sleep like that in 5 seconds between two stations. I can sleep.
And you didn't perceive that there was any problem with your sleep?
No way. No way. I mean, come on. If you're able to sleep in 2 seconds, you're like, wow. You know, that's how the society is. And the more you sleep, faster you sleep, you're like, people are not able to sleep fast. And this guy, he's just like, in 2 seconds, he sleeps. And he starts to snore. And he doesn't let anyone to sleep except Russell. And I was like, that's it.
Because people are perceiving that snoring is not a sign that you're struggling to breathe, but snoring is a sign of deep sleep, which we know now is not correct, but that's definitely what the whole of society thinks.
That's what we know because we are going through that. But I bet even now there is a huge amount of population which don't know, and I've got friends and I keep telling them, no one wants to listen. No one wants, they're like saying, no, it's just everything is in the mind, man. Everything is in the mind. I said, yeah, but I agree. But there's something which is technical which is happening, and you need to look in. You need to look into your technical thing. Why are you snoring? Why are you? But it's very tough to convince people. And I mean, it's normal because I also went through the same thing. I never believed I could have a problem of sleep. You know, I could never believe that. So I do the test. First, it was a home test, you know, with the finger thing. You know, you put it at the finger and things like that. I think I threw it away around after 2 hours or something. So it didn't work. So I had to go to the hospital, 24 hours sleep. So with all those electrodes everywhere, like in the movies, and it was funny. I was like saying, why am I in this? But then the result comes out, and that's when I come to know that I've got AHI of 51. And at the bottom of the paper, it was written very severe apnea. And usually, and that's written in French, so it is très severe apnea. Usually when you say just severe apnea, that itself is severe apnea, that itself is a huge thing.
Yeah.
And a cancerologist telling me very severe, I think, that's not good.
How did you feel when you got that diagnosis, when you saw that?
I mean, I didn't know the seriousness of it. I didn't, first of all, I didn't understand what this AHI is and all those things. No one's there to explain to you in detail. For him, it was like you were seeing another patient. Okay, another one fellow will come. Okay, then you just sign. Yeah. You know, in France, you have all, everything is, the social security is very good, so everything is taken care of.
Yes. So this was the pulmonologist that you saw. Did he? So he didn't explain exactly what was happening and why
that's right. I told.
Did he explain what sleep apnea was, or
no? He just said that you don't sleep well in the night. That's it. You know, and then he said it is not related with your smoking, but it is more related to your constriction, your physiognomy, right? That's how he explained it to me. And I said, okay, so it's a production default kind of a thing. And he told me to use the CPAP machine. If you want to see your kid growing up, who's just 1.5 years, and you need to wear it every time. And I was like, of course, I want to see my kid growing up. And so I was like saying, yes, I will use it.
That's what the doctor said?
Yeah. I mean, what else can he say? Like, yikes. Yeah, but that's how it went. I actually forced myself to get adapted to it. Because my son was just 1.5 years at that, 1.5, 2 years. Every year I used to go back, and every year he used to just read the CPAP readings. And
the data
of the CPAP, and they're like saying, yeah, you're just doing 2 to 5 AHI, so everything is fine, blah, blah, blah. He used to sign, and it was sent. And it used to be just 10 minutes, 15 minutes, not more than that. Every year I used to do that.
Yes.
Right? Years were going on, kids were growing up. You know, you go along with it. In French, they say, train-train.
And you're using the CPAP every night, and you think everything's fine, and you're going to check in every year with the doctor.
I mean, even if I have to take a small nap, I used to put it. And in the beginning, we used to forget it, you know. And that's another incident. My kids used to put a big paper on the front door just before getting out. If you're going out somewhere, they used to say, don't forget the machine of Papa. So because it happened once, we went without the machine. We traveled some 4 hours. We came back to collect it. I need it. No. I need it. It was like, we put a name also for the machine, because it's a robo kind of a thing, you know, the machine. So we said, okay, we'll call it as Roberta.
It's funny how kids really take it in, like, you know, they really need this thing to breathe when they're sleeping. Like my daughter will, you know, I've been using CPAP for a really long time, but I think because of what I do interviewing people, I've interviewed a lot of people who have lost loved ones who have left their sleep apnea untreated, and they want to share that story to help people, you know that it's important. And so I think my younger daughter especially is like, you know, even if I'm just like on the sofa, like kind of closing one eye, but not going to fall asleep. She'll be like hovering over me saying, are you putting your CPAP on? What's happening here?
Exactly. So,
so it's kind of funny.
And I had given this machine a name, which was called Roberta. So everyone likes, you know, kids were like saying, Papa, did you take your Roberta? Because I was saying that is my mistress. I mean, that's what's, it's more closer than
that you're sleeping with.
It's closer than anyone else, you know, and one third of my life I'm going to spend with this particular thing stuck onto my face and things like that. Since childhood, I used to be an overachiever kind, you know, I used to always like try to put my bar much higher and try to reach it. It was always like that. But the thing was, I was getting tired. The more I was trying, the more I was getting tired. And it was going on, and I had a couple of burnouts and things like that in my professional career.
Are you a new or struggling CPAP user? Are you waking up and flinging your CPAP mask across the room in frustration? Maybe you have mask leaks, skin irritation, or wake up with a dry mouth. You might be dealing with uncomfortable trapped gas from swallowing air or hair breakage from your headgear. If any of this sounds familiar, you're not alone, and I wrote a workbook just for you. The 6-week CPAP Solutions Workbook is out now and has been designed to give you solutions to all the most common CPAP problems. Visit sleepapneastories.com to order now. That's sleepapneastories.com.
And then there was a period just after COVID and things. I didn't have a COVID.
It was a strange time for everybody, I think. Like, you know, being all at home together and you're not used to that. And yeah, it was a lot of strain on relationships,
but
I think.
Paradoxically, I was happy having the CPAP because I knew I could keep breathing the whole night. It's working for me and I was like going on. But the one thing was that I was, after that period of COVID and everything, my daytime sleepiness started to increase considerably. I was saying so many things that I can do and I was not able to finish those things. I mean, it was like going in all directions.
And so you were struggling, like, so you were you napping or you're just trying to make it through the day?
I was just trying to.
But feeling really tired and sleepy.
I was just trying to make it through the day. And I was reducing the social interactions also because I started to, you know, getting into a shell of my own. And I was like, you know, I started to.
So not socializing with friends as much.
That's what broke us also. I was leaning on to her too much to an extent where she was unable to manage. Not her fault also because the partners, they suffer also. I was listening to your podcast and seriously, from the bottom of my heart, you saved me in my thoughts, helped me feel that I'm not the only person suffering with such kind of stuff. Thanks a ton for it. I know many people have told you and they will keep telling you, but this is some legacy that you will be leaving it also for your kids and for many people around the world. So really, it's I'm the living proof of the staying alive and trying to fight, but in the taking the right sense.
Well, thank you for saying that.
I used to have headaches and I used to have pains and stuff, but my personal experience, which I'm not saying the whole of France it is like that. Talking purely about my personal experience. So let's be clear with that because I don't want to put the French, their social security system, I feel it is one of the world's best. That's for sure. But I think they need to have more communication between the specialists for a patient. And that was not happening in my case, at least. So you go to the general physician, he will tell you, okay, you go and meet this doctor and then you come back. Then you will have to go to another doctor, come back. You know, so he will be sitting and trying to stitch all the reports. Whereas
together.
I think he should put my profile onto one particular base and all the doctors to whom I am going to should have the patient history which they can consult. I think that's a little bit more intelligent in the way of the approach. And economically,
absolutely,
I think they will be much better because that's another one big issue in France, the social security.
I think, I mean, I have rose-tinted glasses where I think that the UK, just because I grew up in the UK, I kind of see that kind of joined up, having one set of medical records in one place and the GP following the patient and following up with them. I do see that happen just from my experience back in the day, but also from interviewing people in the UK right now. I think that that does happen well there. It doesn't happen in the United States at all. So with the United States, you're having to go, oftentimes you go to a specialist and they don't know anything about your medical history and you have to start again, which doesn't seem like you're saying, it just seems like a wasteful, more expensive way to do it when we have the technology where everybody could be sharing records, you know? I don't know that we're going to solve the whole system today, but...
No, but I mean, that is the difference which I found, in fact, because when I came here and I was like, so we broke up in November 2022. Yeah, it was one of those. Usually I noticed that towards the evening, I'm not the same as, I'm not as fresh as what I am in the morning, right? So yes. The head starts to get clogged up, you know, you have headaches and things like that. So I was having all those things, and one evening it just bust, and and I said, no, let's stop, and then I need to first find out what's, I need to go back to India, and I was like getting suffocated and things like that. So, and I came to India, and then initially I wanted to...
And left your wife and your three children in France.
Yeah.
Yes. And so hard.
Yeah, but I had, it was not, it was a struggle that I had inside me, and I was finding it difficult to express it to anyone, basically.
Yes.
You know? So, I was in my loneliness, and so I didn't know any other way out, and I just had a couple of friends, I had lots of friends, but I still have, but I didn't want to go around telling my story to everyone and things like that, you know, because... Already, it is not understood by the society itself, because it's always pointed at you, like saying, "No, you're lazy. That's why you're not trying. So you're lazy." But I know that I'm not lazy, and I've been trying, and I need no friends.
Yes, you're doing all the things. You went to the doctor. You got the CPAP machine. You're using it, right? You're following all the medical advice you've been given,
except smoking, but that'll come down slowly.
When you were in France and everything blew up with your wife, at that point, were you having any help with any mental health support? Were you going to a therapist? Had you sought support for that? Because I think so much of the time, a lot of the people I talk to, like, there's almost always a mental health element to people dealing with sleep apnea and disrupted sleep. There's that bi-directional relationship between sleep and mental health. And I think men especially often don't think to actually seek help for that. So was that something that you were, able to seek help for?
I was going to the psychiatrist and also the psychologist, and I was talking to them.
Okay.
I mean, I was talking to them and I was explaining them everything. But in Europe, I think they don't make the link between sleep apneas and the mental health. It is two different.
Yes.
It is two different studies. It is only in US and in India also they bring it together, right? So even my psychiatrist or my psychologist, they were saying no, it's because you need to go to some other place, you need to change your mind. They were not making the link between the sleep, lack of sleep, along with this thing. So they were just giving me medicines. So I did another sleep test and my AHI went to 54. I was at 51 in 2012, all right? And in 2022, it went to 54. And I've been using it every time, Emma. Every time I used to snap, I used to be so rigorous. That was a shock for me. I said, no, this can't be possible. It cannot increase. And everyone was like saying, it is just one night, the night before you might have. I said, yeah, but still, it cannot go more than 51. Either it should be 51 or lesser, not more, if I'm being treated.
So I think that's one of the things with CPAP is that you're not like actually treating the underlying reasons you have sleep apnea, right? Okay. for that night, it's keeping your AHI under 5. But I think sometimes people think that if they use it enough, their sleep apnea will go away, which isn't really, unfortunately, how that works.
Exactly.
So you learned that the hard way.
Totally. Totally. So I was like, oh, no, this can't be possible, and et cetera, et cetera. That was in the beginning of 2022. And at the end of 2022, we break up. Then I go back. I come to India and I wanted to meet my kids also. So I do another one test. Mm-hmm. So I was like saying, I've got issues with my leg. I feel like I'm still not sleeping properly. I don't know if it is in medicines. I don't know what's happening. So I want to do another one test. So he does a test with the machine and everything, with the CPAP and everything. And he discovers that I've got RLS. That's the restless leg syndrome.
Yes.
That
okay.
freaked me out. And then, and he tells me, yeah, you can.
Had you heard of restless leg syndrome?
No.
You're like, what is this crazy thing?
And then the craziest was when he told me, yes, you can put a patch. So he gave me a prescription.
Okay. Was it like iron supplements? Or
no.
What?
I can get you the name of it, but I mean, it just freaked me out. He said, you'll have to wear it for a year and just a patch, you put it, and then your restless leg syndrome will be calm because it is because there is a particular protein which is not irrigated and things like that. I said, okay. But I was so scared. And I said, no, I'm not going to. So afterwards, I said, no, I'm not going to use that. I called up my cousin who is a doctor here in India, and she told me, when you come here, we'll see my cousin, who's a doctor, and he helped me. He guided me at that particular period of time because I was just down and out. And yeah, I mean, just after my breakup, actually, I even tried to finish with my life. I had gone to that extent. So it was my friends who helped me out and things like that. So I was coming back from something which was really hard, and none of them thought I could be in that kind of phase because I'm someone who keeps smiling, and I'm like, you know, I'm gay and everything. No one had seen me in that kind of a state. And I totally cut off with everyone, even my best friends, everyone. I totally cut off. And
to isolate yourself, like, I think that's so common when people are dealing with mental health problems.
Yeah, it's a lot of things to do by your own self. I mean, especially when you have your old parents and sister and things like that. I mean, it was not easy for me. So I was happy that I had this cousin of mine, and he helped me to, you know, calm things down. And he said, okay, listen, you will go meet this doctor, do this.
Sorry, was this a neurologist, like a sleep specialist who was a neurologist? Is that what you said?
No, just a neurologist. Just a neurologist. I told him that, you know, my nose, I had a deviated septum, and I was only breathing 25% through my nose. Okay. So I was having headaches every time. I was never able to breathe properly, etc., etc. So he said, okay, let's start from the base. Let's get your breath first correct. So you'll go and meet the ENT. So I went and met the ENT.
Yep.
And he said, okay, we'll have to do an operation. We'll correct your septum first. They clean up my septum, and I was able to breathe. They did a septoplasty, and I was able to breathe through my two nostrils after about 15 years. For 15 years, I was blocked in that manner. Then we did a sleep study again, and that's when I came to know that my sleep has come down to 39.
So you did the septoplasty, and that really helped because now you could breathe through your nose.
I can breathe through my two nose. The two nose, they function. And the doctors, they ran and came in. Never seen someone who's so happy after an operation. You know, I said, yeah, I can breathe. I can breathe through the two nose.
So as I mentioned at the start, we had a few technical issues, and this is where our conversation cut out. But suffice it to say that Bijo's really ended up in a much better place than he was at the beginning of his story. And I'm so grateful for his vulnerability in sharing with us all about his journey. So I hope you enjoyed listening, and I'll see you next week. Thanks so much for listening. I love hearing from you. If you'd like to be featured in an upcoming episode of the podcast, please email me at sleepapneastories@gmail.com. That's also the place to get in touch if you just want to say hi or ask a question. Alternatively, I'm over on Instagram. My handle there is sleepapneastories. If you're enjoying the podcast, please subscribe or follow, rate and review wherever you listen. This really helps a wider audience find the episodes, and I really appreciate it.